welcome to our new Mick Artistic's Ego Pod. We'll be bringing you chat, insight, nonsense, laughter, music, and a few surprises. You can find out about our current activities, gigs, release news at mickartistic.com and on Facebook at Mick Artistic's Ego Trip, as well as plenty of footage on our YouTube channel. And you can follow us on Twitter at Mick Artistic and at Johnny Ego Trip. Today's guest is Casey Orr. Casey Orr is a photographer and she's a performer and a mother and a woman, and she's tall and she's also a model. She's modelled for me once. And hello, Casey.
Hello.
Where's Orr from? O-R-R.
Orr is Scottish-Irish.
So, all right.
So my people went from, that I know of, went from Ireland to New Jersey. And they were Orrs from Northern Ireland and Caseys. And that's who they were.
All right, okay.
So, yeah.
And you went over there to America, blah, blah. So you were there and you're born in America. And what possessed you to pick a camera up?
So when I was 13, 14, and I was looking around for something to be, something to kind of define me, trying out for to be a cheerleader or to be in the student government or all these different options for identity. And then just, which none of them worked out, and I just picked up a camera and that was it. And I've been utterly, you know, obsessed, and it defines my life. I'm with my camera, and that's how I am in the world,
no,
really,
get,
since then.
Yeah, no, I get that. Because when I picked up a biro and I drew somebody in pen, and I kind of clocked, I thought, oh, I'm a portrait artist.
Yeah. You
know, it's about people and about connecting with people and celebrating them.
Whatever. Yeah. And it's that connection can be so profound, even if it's only momentary. It's about, and you feel really, yeah, connected to everything, don't you, when you're with that person in that moment.
This little badge, this little kind of like sort of a fantastic badge appears on you. It says photographer, or it says sculptor, or it says potter, or it says singer. You think, I'm a singer, I'm a whatever. But I think this is almost like it's like a little switch that goes, a bell goes, ding, there you are. Rubber stamped, that's what you are now.
Yeah.
And you're very happy with that. I mean, I know I was very happy when I found that. I thought, oh, that's a good job, that portrait artist. I can make some money and I can do art.
Yeah. How old were you when you felt that?
I was 27. So there's twice the age when you discovered. But I think when I was a lot younger, I tried out things. And I was always drawing, but I never felt particularly strong about myself as a person. So I felt very, very lacking in confidence, and there's a lot of it. I'm not good at this, I'm not good at that, and I can draw people, but I always say, but I can't paint, or I can't do buildings, or I can't use a ruler, so therefore I'm rubbish. And I basically threw away all the good stuff threw the baby away with the bathwater, which is that I could actually draw people, I could capture the human form, and it really it was like a medicine for me.
Mm-hmm.
It made me really made me happy, and it got me through a lot of kind of troubles of when you're really when you're young and small and feeling kind of anonymous, I think.
Yeah, it is medicine.
Yeah. And was it did I mean, you said you were so what other things did you try? You said cheerleader.
Okay, so I tried to be in the... Well, I tried to just kind of find all those American high school places that you're allowed to be at that time. And I tried them all. And none of them really fit in. I mean, even the art thing, it was all... I think I found my place when I found the people who... The partying wild people and the artists. And there was something in between that was like, okay, that's me. I fit in there.
Mm-hmm. And were you like tall at 13? Were you like, cause you're like,
I was like big.
Yeah. So
big kid.
So big kids are always kind of, they're always like sort of, I know I can remember the big kid at my school, and we were always a little bit kind of, why is he so big?
Yeah.
And so they're basically, they,
yeah.
they always seem to be a little bit separate, and you could understand if they sort of they walked a solitary path. So did you walk a solitary path?
No, I was always really good at fitting in, good at socializing, and was always fun. Like people liked me, but a big kid, like a girl, big girl.
A
so
big
that
kid,
didn't
a big
like
girl.
Fit in with what boys like or whatever.
Because you'd be bigger than. Just, than a lot of the boys, I suppose.
Yeah.
And they'd be there, you can't be my girlfriend because I'm the man. I'm the boy. And I look silly if my girlfriend's bigger than me. She looked like my mum or something, you know.
Yeah. But unfortunately, Bob doesn't care.
Because
I'm bigger than him. But.
So when did you meet Bob?
So I met Bob. I went to San Francisco after I went to college and found my people and stepped into my big weird shoes, and then I went to San Francisco and I lived there for a bit, and then I met Boff when he was on tour with his band, and I just met him in a bar one night, so I didn't know of his band or anything, and
you hadn't seen the band, you just kind of
I didn't see them and I didn't know who they were and just met him, and then he was there for a couple of days, and then by the time he left we were falling in love, and we started writing letters because it was back in those days, so typewriters. And we just had this long distance relationship for a year until I moved here. And then a year later, I thought, well, I'll go and try it out and just see who this person is. And then never really considering what I was doing or that maybe I was moving to England forever or anything like that. Just thought I'd want to come over and go on an adventure with this person. And then that was almost 30 years ago now.
Wow. So that's a big thing to do to leave your country to follow somebody else.
I know.
Because I know some people, friends of mine have done that, and it's a bit of a struggle because you have to kind of make a decision, after what it can either sort of die on the vine, that relationship, or you can say, right, well, I'm going to come. One of us is going
to
come.
One of
us has to cross the water.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So
when you were, who were you looking at? You're taking pictures. So who were your influences?
Okay, so I've always, I really love the portrait photographers, Richard Avedon and Irving Penn, and these great kind of people who were doing portraits but working in fashion and also doing their own projects, that people who were working in studios. And sorry, it's raining. That's all, just to explain that. That's why Mick and I stopped talking for a minute. So, my favorite photographer, I mean, I loved all the American photographers, and my favorite photographer was Bellick, this photographer who worked in New Orleans in the turn of the last century, and he photographed prostitutes on these big glass plate negatives. And those were pictures I've always returned to. Those are some of my most kind of favorite photographs ever taken, these prostitutes at the turn of the century and this relationship that this photographer who nobody knows much about had with
them. Never heard of him.
And he died in a fire, and most everything was burnt up. And then these plates were later found, and they were reprinted. And I saw them in the kind of this library in Vermont where I went to school, in the basement library. And I'd sit there, and that was one of the books that they had. And those are still pictures I return to now to look at. So.
Yeah, I mean, I've heard of Irving Penn as well. I'm trying to think what stuff did he do? Did he work for
I loved these. I mean, the social documentary photographers. I really love people who were kind of witnessing the world in a way, like Walker Evans, who was photographing for the Farm Security Administration and photographing the poverty in the American South. And photographers like Diane Arbus really spoke to me, and her way of street portraits, which is that kind of thing of like that you do also, that thing of connecting with somebody momentarily. Or I don't know if when I came here, one of the photographers that I was looking at was Daniel, I forgot his name. Daniel, I want to say in...
You crack on and look for it, it's fine.
Hang on.
I'm just admiring this scatter blast.
Oh, this is...
Gun. Yeah. There's a gun on this, but by my side, and it's in case... In case it gets difficult, I'll just have to give her both barrels.
This is terrible because I want to say Daniel Johnston, which is, of course, not his name. That's another
Daniel Meadows. Daniel Meadows.
Anyway, and he did this...
He sounds American.
He's British, and did this thing in the early 70s where he got this bus and he transformed it into a dark room, and he traveled around the UK and he photographed people, and then he'd go back into the dark room bus... And he'd develop his pictures, and then he'd put an exhibition on the side. And so for...
On the side of the bus?
Yeah, okay. And in different spaces in towns.
Yeah.
And so for me, this way that he brought in this kind of performance, it's an adventure. You're traveling around. There's a performative element, like as the photographer, you're making this spectacle. Mm-hmm. And then you're also doing the portraits. So for me, that project has everything that I love. I want the adventure of kind of the traveling around, the meeting people, even if it's just, you know, going down the street and being in somebody's, you know, in somebody's home.
It's great.
I love it. Yeah. I mean, when I lived in Armley, when I met you, I'd go to the Armley Helping Hands and hang out with the old women there. And that to me was an adventure.
Where was that?
Armley Helping Hands is in, it's in Wortley. And they're this incredible organization that supports the elderly in Armley. And Emma Bierman and I, used to just go there and hang out. And we felt like we were on this adventure. And you just kind of like knew that they would, you know, they knew everything. And
I'm sure.
And it was so, you know, I absolutely, I loved being there and being with them, and I made some friends with some of those women. But that adventure, you know, could just be about like going into somebody's kitchen and being like, "Hey, what you got in that cupboard?" You know, that's as much as an adventure as kind of traveling off.
We're all nosy.
Yeah,
it's great going. I think, oh my god, oh, that's quite nice. I wouldn't mind taking that home with me.
Yeah. Or like, but how do you get in that? How do you got your badge on where you're like, hey, I'm an artist. Let me.
No, thing is, I've before I was a musician, I'd wander around drawing people on paper bags, and I'd go in people's kitchens and I'd be sitting with them, and then after about 15 minutes of me drawing somebody on a brown paper bag, the little kid would go to the cupboard and pull out some paper, and then his dad would start drawing a picture. So you get the family, they'd sit there and become totally engrossed. And I'd have like a little drawing class going on around me.
Amazing.
And I felt really kind of like part of the family there for about 15, 20 minutes.
What do you think? Do you think we're going to have to move inside?
Yeah.
Do you think it's good? should we... Right, hang on. All right, I'm going to come around and open the door. And you just stay here, yeah? And
I'm staying here.
All right, and you can just... I'll be right back. I'll come around.
Okay. We're talking about meeting people.
Yeah, meeting people.
And loving them.
Yeah.
And just being... Because you have a mini love affair. Because suddenly you're part of the family. You're like little uncle or Uncle Festo or Auntie Philomena for about 15 minutes. And they make a cup of tea... And you're looking around and think, oh God, they've got metal cupboards, or they take them tablets or whatever.
I know.
I just remember I was in Beeston a few years ago. Somebody asked me to come and do a drawing in Beeston. I used to live there, and I went out to the house. I opened the door and I walked in, and he was sitting in the middle of a bare floor. There's a chair there, and he sits on the, and he's got like a like a little tattoo. Under each eye, a little blue tattoo, and he had a little line, just like a tattoo dotted line around his neck that said, cut here. And he had two little daughters.
What?
He had two little daughters that were running around this bare floor. One of them was wearing socks that were playing jingle bells. And this is like August. And she had these socks that were playing jingle bells. you know, these
yeah,
and they were just ragging him and pulling him and stuff, and he was just like this big floppy rag doll. They just like, you know, he just let them, and he's just, you know, kind of quite a,
yeah,
an odd looking guy in a t-shirt with tattoos and stuff. And I drew him, and I just felt, I felt at home.
Yeah.
I felt like I was privy to some, I felt like it was this, like, in a Tarkovsky film or something. It, it just felt really, and I was in a lot of these situations when I was doing these brown paper bag drawings. And that to me was, that was the essence of the job. Yeah. It wasn't so much the drawing, because I thought, I mean, I can draw, but it was, it was the hunt.
Yeah, I know.
It was the excitement and the exhilaration of being in a place where almost like you're not supposed to be,
yeah,
and you're given access to another.
It's so humbling, yeah, and it's so beautiful to be invited into somebody's life for a minute. It's so it's kind of like
they trust you.
Yeah, they trust you, and they're there's an open-heartedness for just however long it lasts, that you want more.
And maybe it's
it?
Because maybe it's because they see you as somebody special. They see an artist as somebody who's not threatening. He's not the tax man. He's not a loan shark.
Yeah.
He's this person who is, or she's this person who is a bit exotic. It's a bit kind of odd.
Yeah.
And all artists are always a bit odd, but they're not. They're not kind of violent. They're not going to kind of like steal your money. But so that they kind of allow you. You seem to be like a holy fool or something.
Yeah, and it's a powerful position to be in.
Mm.
But it's also. But it's what was I going to say to that? But you're. It's because you're also giving somebody attention. You really, really want to see them. You're really interested, yeah, like truly interested, and you don't want something from them other than to see them. And I think they know that. They know that you're just wanting to, you're just interested, and you're just asking for them to, you kind of be themselves. And there's a lot to be, that is in an amazing, we love that, right? Because that's an incredible thing to be in. But for somebody else, I think they know that that's all you want. Yeah. All you want is to...
And sometimes, sometimes when I've been drawing somebody, I haven't realized just how much it means to this other person. And there's a big strapping guy in front of me who's like, oh, yeah. And I've been drawing him and I'm thinking, oh, is he comfortable? And I say, it's okay, you know, because I've been drawing him for like 15 minutes. So, oh no, I like this. And he's, and then some people say, oh no, like people I've drawn, they say, well, you've looked at me longer than my husband has for the last 10
yeah.
years. And there's people and they're basking it.
It's,
there's something like they're being starved of attention, some people are.
Yeah.
And so you are lucky to have walked into this situation, and you can be sort of helpful. You can, and it's also just, it's such a wonderful sort of episode to be in, you know, not just for this person, but for both of you.
Yeah.
You both get something out of it.
Yeah.
I walked out and I'm, you know, nearly in tears sometimes.
I know.
Because I felt something so profound and so intense from being in somebody's company, and they've let me see them.
Yeah, they've let you
they've
see
let
them.
Let you see them. And that's nothing, there's nothing better than that.
I know, there's nothing better. And then, it's also, it's kind of, you ask, you know, if it's a portrait, you're asking. It's a portrait is a picture of, you know, somebody who knows that they're being photographed or drawn. So it's not like the kind of photography that where you're not asking, that's something different. It's a thing where you're saying, may I, and the person says yes. And then you, and there's something really beautiful about the asking and that the giving
and
permission,
yeah,
the asking and the giving permission. And then it's a collaboration from there.
Yeah, it is. And also, it also involves the person who's, I've realized that I had to sort of show, let them see me as
yeah.
well. And so I've been drawing for the last, I haven't sold a drawing in about 2 days, and I'd sit there and I'd say, and you know, and I'm struggling, you know, I've got two kids at home, and I'm a bit, you know, somebody was taking the piss out of me in this pub about 10 minutes ago, and I felt a bit low, and so I'm not my confidence is that great. So it's almost like, yeah, I used to have to show my...
Yeah.
So that I wasn't this kind of powerful, kind of romantic figure. I was just an ordinary guy who's got the same issues as the person I'm drawing, and let them see that I meant them no harm. Not that I meant them no harm, but just that it wasn't...
You're safe.
It's not, it's not kind of... I don't have possessing any extraordinary powers. I'm just here, and I can, and I can draw, and I'm going to give you something that is from here.
Yeah.
And it's not, I'm not going to miss out the double chin. You're going to get the double chin, and you're going to get the wart or the wrinkle down the side, you know. And, but at the same time, that to me is what, you know, makes you beautiful, makes a person beautiful.
Yeah.
And people say, oh, don't draw me because I'm, you know, I'm saying, you're fine, you know. Yeah. They say, can I just... And I used to walk into garages and there'd be somebody there with overalls on it. And they'd say, can I draw you? And they'd go, well, I've got my working gear on. And I'd say, but you look great.
Yeah.
Just sit down and I'll draw you.
I think we've got like this such a small idea of what beautiful is in culture. It's such a small idea that we're sold about what's beautiful or who's beautiful or what is meant to be, you know, we're meant to kind of appreciate, and has to do with these ideas about, you know, youth and, you know, stuff like that.
And maybe preparation. You have to sort of prepare yourself to be beautiful.
Yeah.
You're not beautiful already. You need to add that kind of like that bit of stuff around here, that bit of
make it romantic
dabbing.
Or something.
You need to just sort of get the hair, the dye's coming out of your hair or something. Oh my God, so you're not beautiful.
But
I remember taking a photograph of my wife in about 1987 or something, and she'd gone over to Ireland, and we'd just been to visit my mum and dad, and she's striking, a black woman. She's running towards me, or she's running across this yard, and she's normally quite sort of guarded about the way she looks and the way she presents herself.
Yeah.
And she looks about 14 years old, and her face is open, and her hair's flying, and she's got her teeth are flashing, and it's the most beautiful photograph. And she didn't like it. She says, "Oh God, mate, oh God, I look awful in that." But I says, "You look stunning in that because you just you're there's joy. It's such a joyful image."
Yeah.
And you're beautiful because you're overcome with joy, you know, and it expands people.
Happiness
just inflates people.
Yeah.
And they become less kind of squeezed or less kind of tense.
I mean, yeah. Just, well, you get in the flow, don't you? You're kind of in the flow of life, and you can step into that, you know, you no matter what's going on.
And it's really, when I see somebody happy, I'm really envious because I think, oh God, look, they're so happy. And there's a bit of me that goes, oh, that's wonderful. But a bit of me goes, oh gosh, why are they so happy? And I see that, and there's a bit of me, I want to be as happy as him or her.
Yeah. You know? But, are you happy?
Yeah, I am happy. Yeah. I'm happy. I'm happy and sad.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, I woke up this morning and I think I was very sad. And I don't know why. I think, and Kat says, well, you know, there's no reason, you know, because then I started giving reasons. Well, why am I sad? Because I've sold a load of books. I've sold 45 books and I've got this podcast going. I'm going to be going down to London to do this. And I've got... And she says, you don't have to make a list of all the things that your blessings, you know, maybe there is a, you know, because there's a lot of things to be sad about. There's like, the world is really kind of grim at the moment, and there's a lot of suffering, and there's lots of people suffering. There's people being shot on the street in America, and there's lies that are just blatantly being sort of spread everywhere. And there's nobody who's showing any kind of integrity in power.
Yeah.
There's so many charlatans and so many bullies. Mm. And so, yeah, you can be sad. So I thought, well, fine. And I'm thinking, what will I say to Casey, you know, when I come up? But It's been good. I've been doing this podcasting for about a month now, and I've had various conversations. I had a conversation with my brother initially, and my brother laid into me for about 15 minutes initially, and just said all the terrible things I used to do to him as a child. So it was wonderful, but then he got into sort of art and stuff. So I've done about a dozen interviews, and they've never gone the way I expected. This is my mother now.
You gonna go see your mum?
Possibly. Yeah, my mother's. I visited her yesterday, and she's. She rings me every day. She's down the road about.
I know.
15 minutes away.
I love
and
it.
She's on her own. She's her husband died 12 years ago, and she gets out in the morning and she does 5 or 6 laps of this park that's just down the bottom. She goes to mass. She's got a little kind of squad of hardcore women who she hangs out with, and they go and do coffee and they go walking and stuff. And yesterday I brought my daughter up to see her. Where was it? My 45-year-old daughter, and we sat in the backyard, and I nearly hugged my mum.
Do you know what? Oh, you did.
I nearly hugged my mother now. I've not hugged her, and it's, but anyway.
Yeah, it's weird now. Everything's weird about, you don't know what you should do or what you shouldn't do. Or
no, this is it. It's like I went down to London last week and I saw my kids, and my daughter jumped on me and grabbed me and gave me a hug, and I was like, and I hadn't hugged my other daughter. But my youngest daughter grabbed me, and then my son grabbed me, and then they were both hugging me, and I held on for 5 minutes.
I know.
I held on. I thought, well, if I die, I die.
I know.
So there's a bit of me that's just trying to be incredibly kind of to be the adult in the room, but there's a bit of me that thinks I'm just so sad that I can't.
I know.
Hug my friends, my loved ones. You know.
I know. I just have to think about everything all the time, and And it just feels like there's so much, there's so much. I mean, Boff and I, we talk about it every day. We're like, okay, where are we today? What should we do today? How do we act now? So I don't know. But I mean, what did you, because you're taking pictures right now, you're kind of, this is like a meditation that you're doing when you're going around photographing every signs of life.
Oh, yeah, you. Yeah.
It's
yeah.
kind of like your way of getting, of making sense, isn't it? Just this.
Yes, it is. I suppose it's like a little meditation. I mean, it's a little island an island of peace in a world that is not peaceful and a world that is out of control. So, I've just seen a little sign for a bag of carrots.
Yeah.
That just lifted me.
Yeah.
So I just took a picture, and yesterday I saw a flattened watering can, just completely flattened. It was just by the curb, and I thought, what a wonderful picture. And it's debris. Most of the stuff has it's debris, but those mean that people are around, because these are the kind of the droppings of life.
Yeah,
people have dropped that. So there is, this is it. There's life around here somewhere.
Yeah,
you know, even if it's like a shopping trolley, they're sitting in the canal. It means somebody shoved that shopping trolley. So basically, we're not alone.
Yeah.
And that to me gives me a lot of pleasure. So every day I've kind of, not every day, but I'm wandering around and I'll just see something on the ground, or I'll see something on a wall. You know, it could be like somebody put like, I saw a little broken window with like some, it had a bin liner stuck in it to sort of keep the glass in. And there was like 2 cans of Stella sort of sitting on the windowsill. And it was like it could have been a Bruegel painting, you know, it was still life.
Yeah.
So, and it is, it's still life. So
yes.
It means, So we just, the thing is, in this time when sort of the thoughts are like kind of like impending death, and, you know, there's a possibility that you'll lose an auntie, an uncle and stuff, there needs to be signs of life.
Yeah.
And art is a sign of life.
Yeah.
And people are making stuff right now. They're making stuff. I mean, what are you making at the moment?
Well, I spent a lot of time in lockdown painting, actually. So I would paint words.
Yeah, I saw your signs when I came up last time.
I just paint signs, words, because I think I'll paint letters, and I really like the I like the kind of glossy, I like the kind of layout. And I do teach graphic design, even though I do not consider myself that. So it's quite funny that I started like painting these letters. And I just like to kind of think about the spacing of them and the color and think of the letters and how they fit onto the board or whatever. And I make these signs. And for me, it's definitely a way of not thinking. Don't think. Just paint. What does it mean? What do these colors mean? So, but I've been doing that over lockdown, and then, but what I'm doing now is I'm kind of gearing myself up to start some big work and to start some new work and to just step away from anything that isn't photography and just to, you know, to pick up my camera, in a pretty big way. That's what I'm planning on doing. But, and I've got a book coming out. So I'm also, I'm getting my book finished. So I'm doing all these things that I...
So this is a book of images.
Okay, so yeah. So my book, this, I've got a book of photographs coming out that you might know this about this, but I've been working on this thing called Saturday Girl for about 7 years, where I've traveled around the UK and I've photographed young women on Saturday afternoons in different towns and cities. So I always go, I always photograph on a Saturday afternoon. And it's documentary photography, but and street portraits, but it's done in a pop-up portrait studio, so it has the look of kind of fashion or something that's it's just these bright colored backgrounds. But I kind of grab people off the street, and it's a way of looking at what how are young women being visible in the world, and how are they using like the fashion and bodily self-expression to kind of say something about who they want to be. And can you, my question to myself was, I wonder if different towns and cities and different regions, if it's different, and if a girl is saying something about her, the landscape that she's from, and whether or not it's a port city, or whether, can you read, you know, if it's Liverpool, can you read that they're facing Ireland in the way, and you can. You can.
Yeah, I was looking at some this morning and I saw a wonderful one. I think it was just a shot of a Scottish girl and she had a black T-shirt on it. It said, ketamine, just say nay.
Yeah.
And it's just such a cool T-shirt.
I know.
And there was a London girl just with, she had like a little tie stuck up. She had like a short, like a crop sort of T-shirt and a little tie stuck out and then tights pulled up. And this morning I was walking...
Crazy fashion.
Yeah, I was walking to the bus station this morning and there was a young girl with a... She had like glasses on. She had this little bonnet on, like a sort of a tidy St. Trinian's bonnet and nice green sort of skirt suit and black tights on. And she had a mask on, a black mask with a false nose stuck on the front of the black
Amazing.
Mask. One of the big hook noses. And she looked stunning.
That's cool.
And it was... I just thought, cool.
Yeah.
And... These things are so necessary. These, you know, just to say, look, I'm here, and look at me.
I know it's a language. It's a language, and it's like it's a playful language, and it's kind of, you know, and I think it's also something that young women and everyone are, you're doing it, but you're kind of it's being handed down to you, and it's not a conscious language. But it's something that you're wearing something and it, you know, it becomes maybe something like your grandmother had this hairdo and you don't even know where, why she decided to have that kind of hairdo. But maybe it goes back to, you know, something that people were in medieval times were piling their hair up in a certain way. And it's kind of passed down through generations and seen through this different lens of what, you know, who we are now. And I just think it's very powerful and that we are sold this very tiny idea about what people look like, but it's wrong because they are absolutely all kind, you know, people are all kinds of different looking all different ways. And
they're every day. And I mean, back on when I was doing paper bag drawings, the whole idea of me doing a paper bag drawing of somebody was that people can't be bagged. Because everybody has different shades, different sort of story. They have different moods, and you can't judge somebody by, his hair's shaved, whatever, and he's got a solid jaw, and he's got rippling muscles and stuff. And you don't. The thing is, there's so much more. That fella there, he may want to live with otters for the rest of his life. He just wants to live with, you know, in a room full of otters. So you don't know. You know nothing. Including yourself, you don't know yourself.
I know.
You know, because you could go out tomorrow and you could think, right, I'm off. What I'm going to do is I'm going to just basically live in water now.
Yeah.
I've got myself a little bag, waterproof bag, and it's got nuts. I've got 6 weeks worth of nuts in this bag, and I'm going to live in this lake.
That's my dream.
So, the idea that because I've got my suit on today, but I like my jeans and I like decoration.
But the suit is you're kind of stepping out looking like a big weirdo in your suit as well.
Yeah.
It's fun, you know, but it sends you apart. I mean, you know, it's good. You're looking good in it.
It's big. Look.
Yeah, you can run up the street.
This is from Otley. I bought this suit in Otley. It cost me about £2, I think.
That's the best.
Gemma's.
I think that's the best now. It feels like the...
Travira.
I
remember the word Travira, but I don't know what it was. It's obviously some kind of
magic
texter.
Ask your mother.
Right.
Can I just ask you something before you move on to this idea that there's the portraiture and the connection with people, but then there's also you, the performance that you do, I recognize that there's a performance in running around with your paper bags.
Yep.
And asking people if you can do this, you know. And
it's busking-y kind of, there's theatre there.
Yeah, it's theatre.
And I used to dress up to go out to go drawing in Hunslet. I used to put on some Turkish pants and put on some really dodgy shoes and basically psych myself up. I thought, if I can go into Hunslet wearing these Turkish trousers and this kind of red, with this strange kind of little elephant hat on, walk into a pub in Hunslet, I'm going to do it, and I don't care, and no matter and I just had to sort of like blow myself up to go and do it, and it was, I just remember the anxiety that I went through and the stress of it, but also walking in, and a lot of the time people, they accept, here's the bad man.
Yeah.
And they see something else, they don't see what you see, you know, they just see, he's an artist, probably look, that's how artists dress. Yeah, I'll have one, yeah. And they don't mind, they're not worried about your trousers. The only person worried about is yourself. Because you're just thinking, I've got to get out and make some money. I've got to go to work. I've got the kids to feed. And I'm going to have to just break through this envelope of this envelope of fear and get out there. And then you realise that it's just fear.
But isn't it because you could have probably found an easier way to make that money, but it's fun, right? It's fun to get dressed and be like, push yourself and just be like, I'm going in there. And it's fun.
Of course, because people say, well, the bit of me that said, why don't I just get some nice paper and just do it and get some nice rotary pens, gel pens, and just sit in the studio and do his portraits? Why do I have to go out with a paper bag and put myself in a tap room?
I mean, surely,
Is it masochism? Is it, you know, is it a death wish? You know, but I found it was a wheeze.
Yeah.
It was a trip.
I know.
It was like drugs.
Yeah.
It was, you know, and I think there was something about that, and that basically I needed to have the danger of that activity.
Yeah, but it makes you feel alive.
Yeah.
I mean, do you think that there's a connection between running, because you run, you know, the energy of running and the energy of the other things you do?
Oh, because the energy of walking, when I was be out drawing, if I was going to, I'd be walking for about 4 hours a night or during the day. It was very physical, and but it was also very sensitive.
Yeah.
So there's an incredible amount of energy I needed to be. I'd be walking from one end of, like, you know, Stoke to the other, or from Huddersfield.
Yeah, and I'll, that's a performance down as well.
Yeah,
just the walking. But there's also like a certain, people have a certain amount of energy where you just can't, you can't sit still.
Yeah.
And there's that as well.
Well, I was talking to Vic Goddard down in London last week, and he was a postman for 30 years.
Yeah.
He says, because he likes the outdoors. And, you know, there he is with his bag marching along, yeah. And yet he's, can sit down and do something, you know, kind of thoughtful and considered, and spend, you know, a lot of time just shaping words. But it's something he wants to be. So there's a part of me that I used to love charging around playing football and just being running, and I ran all my life. I used to run to gigs. I remember going to see the Ramones one night, and my girlfriend lived in Buttershaw in Bradford, and I finished the gig after seeing the, and I ran to Buttershaw. And I used to do that. I used to run to her house. I was studying at Trinity in All Saints. I did a degree in theology, and I used to run from Beeston to Horsforth up to with bags of books and stuff, and turn up, you know, sweating. And I wondered why. And I wondered why people looked at me strangely, because I thought it was kind of like normal.
I know. I remember when I lived in San Francisco. Me and my my friend who I lived with, we had this jewelry making business, and I'd put my roller skates on and get the box of jewelry to go and, you know, deliver it to the shops. Yeah. I'd just go roller skating around, go get on the train, go to Berkeley, you know, to these fancy places, and I'd be all sweaty and this big weirdo turning up.
Yeah.
It's like, what are you doing? And then it could, you know. But it's just fun. It's just fun, and it still is.
There's something a bit subversive about it, and you don't think about it. It's just pleasure.
Yeah.
And I just remember being the very first time I sold a brown paper bag to somebody. I was so tickled.
Yeah.
And I felt so proud of myself. And I thought, I just sold somebody a paper bag.
How much did you sell them for?
Oh, it was when I first started. I think the first was about £3.
Yeah.
But that, like, 1983, January 83, I started to draw on paper bags. I've discovered I could draw in November 82, do portraits, and then I kind of got a bit bored with doing them on cartridge paper. And I saw these paper bags on the counter in a bread shop, and I thought, oh, they look great.
Yeah.
And then I just thought, oh.
Oh, it's so nice, the colour of them.
Yeah.
And to not have that white.
Yummy.
White can be so, you know, ink
is quite sort of aggressive, and it's quite, it takes no prisoners,
and
white paper. So the thing is, but the brown nullifies the kind of the harshness of ink. So it's almost like, because I remember seeing a Bob Marley album cover called something like Burning, I think it was, and it's basically a tea chest with Bob Marley's face branded it in, you know, like,
yes,
it's like,
I know,
it's like
that,
a brand.
Yeah.
And it's a, and to me, I, that image just stayed with me. It just, I was thinking, oh, that's beautiful. So when I drew something on the bag, it looked like a kind of a, something had been branded onto the bag.
Mm.
And there was something kind of old and archaic about this brown.
Yeah.
An image on brown, because it could have been weathered by sort of time. And to see sort of these punks appearing on brown paper and seeing,
I think the other thing is ink. I mean, you have to just jump right in, and you can't stop, and you can't think, or else you'll lose the flow of it. Like the same, you know, you have to jump in and just go in that flow, or else it's stilted.
You have to be less thoughtful.
Yeah.
And you basically just have to, you have to leap.
Yeah.
It's a leap of faith.
Yeah.
And you're just thinking, I'm good. And
yeah,
you just think, I'm incredibly good at this. I'm going to save this. It's like being a doctor or something. You know, being a doctor, but you're a key worker.
Yeah,
you know, because the thing is, you have to think that way. You have to think this is an incredibly important thing, and it is. So a bit of me, and there's other noise in your head going, then why are you doing it on a brown paper bag? Why are you using the viral?
What's that? Who's that voice? that's some teacher or something.
Something, yeah. Yeah.
But I mean, I think right now too, it's, you know, poetry and art making, it feels essential. If that's what you do, I think
art makers, I love that expression, art making, poetry and art making. Yeah.
It's like
making bread or something. It sounds like a healthy occupation, art making.
Art making, yeah.
Yeah.
Let's do some art making today.
Yeah. So do you do art making with Boff? Do you collaborate?
We collaborate on things, and he helps me. Well, we just talk constantly about our work. We throw ideas back and forth constantly while we're running. That's the thing.
So you go running as well? I didn't realize.
Oh, yeah. So we go running together, and we just talk about whatever we're doing.
While you're running?
Yeah.
All right, yeah.
That's the hill behind us here. I'm up there every day, pretty
much.
And
you swim as well. You go.
I go.
Wild swimming as well.
Yeah.
Don't you?
My favorite thing is to go from here, run up the Chevin, run down across, and then it's kind of like about a 5-mile loop, and then get in the river up at the mill, swim to the bridge, and then I climb out like a wet rat and just come walk through town.
Seven.
Happy, love it. Absolute favorite.
Yeah.
Favorite thing.
Right.
But I don't know, what was I talking about before then? Oh, you were asking me if Boff and I collaborate. We've got.
When you're running out and you talk, yeah.
We're talking, and we do work together, but it's difficult because we've got two kids, and one of them is still, he's a little guy still, he's 10. And it's just impossible to, you know, one of us needs to be here, kind of.
Being a parent.
Yeah, being a parent. And we're often kind of trading off that. Yeah. So we have other people we collaborate with. And I love collaborating with people, though, when you have that shared energy with, you know, somebody else is bringing something to what you're doing. It's great.
Yeah, I don't work as an artist, as somebody doing visual stuff. I tend to work alone, but I did work with my friend, there's a fellow like Josh Sutton down the road, who you know.
Yeah.
And Boff said to me a few years ago, he said, why don't you make a little video for one of your songs? Because I was thinking, how do I push this single, you know? And he said, do a video. And I said, okay, how do you do it? You know, do like a animation.
Yeah.
I'm thinking, animation? But then he said, Josh will help you. So I went down to this Josh Sutton.
Yes.
And we did, I brought a load of like felt tip drawings and tore them up into little bits, whatever. And we had a sheet of black paper, and me and Josh did a little stop motion film.
Yeah, I've seen it.
Yeah, and it was such a. And we started. He said, "Look, my kids are coming. I've got to go pick my kids up at 3 o'clock. Get here for 9 o'clock. We'll do a film in a day." I thought, "What?" We started at 9, and we were on our knees for about 6 hours. No break for lunch. Went straight through and made this film. And my back was broken at sort of 3 o'clock, and he had to get up and go running off. And when we came back, he got his son back from school, a daughter. And then we thought, right, we have to look at the results now, because he had to sort of work it out in his head, sort of the timing and stuff. And he had like a little exercise book there with the times, like 5 seconds for the snow to fall, 10 seconds for David Bowie's Brolly. And then he said, I hope it's going to be in sync with the music. And then we sat there, and he turned the thing on, and the music started, and the images were married to the music.
That's
and I
incredible.
Stood there, and I was just, I couldn't get my breath. I was so, and I thought, it's a film, and it's my film, and it's mine and Josh's film. And I've just finished a book with a friend of mine.
Yes.
And I've known this guy for about 40 years. And we've always sort of shared drinking and dancing and music. But we've never done, and he's bought some of my paintings and stuff. But we've never worked together. And we've just spent the last 3 months talking to each other and suggesting stuff. And it's been lovely. It's been like a holiday. I've had 3 months holiday with my friend. And now we have a book. And there's something so beautiful about
the conversation
that happens. Yeah.
I've got my new work that I'm doing is about, they're all about collaboration. So I want to bring in all the things I love about photography, documentary photography, adventures, I'm calling them road trips. And the idea that I'd kind of ask somebody to come in with me and we'd collaborate, and there'd be some performance, whatever we decide to do. This is the new work that I'm going to start doing. But it's kind of, what would you do? You know, so I'll say to somebody, will you go on this journey with me and in search of wisdom? That's what I realized that I was kind of looking for in any of it. That's the baseline. Like, will you come with me in search of wisdom? Where would we go? And what, you know, we have a conversation that kind of builds up what maybe this little journey might be that I would take with a person, which might be for an afternoon or it might be for a few weeks. And in there, there's, you know, performance and whatever we do along the way. And you know, documentary photography and.
So you said you were talking about, you know, you do so you started as a, you draw and paint and, well,
yeah,
you do drawing as well.
So I do. I mean, I don't really, I mean, I teach, so I've taught for a long time at Leeds Beckett, what was Leeds Poly.
Yeah.
On the graphic art and design course, but I'm there as a photographer.
Mm-hmm.
So, but my students are often, they'll be doing illustration or animation, or, you know, they'll be doing graphic design. So, and I'm around all those people who I teach with, but I'm a photographer, but I do also, I mean, I just, you know, I've always been, well, I do draw as kind of a journaling, and but during this time,
sort of like ideas bookie sort of stuff.
Yeah, yeah, and that, you know, but
and you're left-handed as well.
I'm left-handed, yeah. But this, you know, putting kind of pencil to paper is something I have to do that regularly. I kind of enjoy.
And you've banned as well.
Yeah,
the erotic power of F.
F equals, yeah.
Yeah.
So I do this collaboration with these three other women, and we do performance and different, you know, art projects kind of stuff. Basically, we just get together and laugh and make things. But we did one.
So do you have like instruments on stage?
One of us decided, okay, let's be a band, and we thought that was really funny. So we went and booked a room to practice, and then we thought that was pretty fun and funny, so we did it again. And then we thought, hey, let's write a song.
So do you sing or play guitar?
I sing, and I pretend to play guitar. And mostly we've got more props on stage than we have instruments. And we just have like, you know, we have backing tracks, and we have a few instruments that we play. And then we just have we have so many props, crazy things, giant hands and different, you know, witchy looking things and signs, and we've done a few gigs, and we have an EP out. It's coming out on Halloween on October 31st. So we've got we did a gig with Cud. We opened for them at the Lead Mill in Sheffield.
Oh wow.
It was fun. It was so fun. So yeah.
And and Yellow as well.
Yeah,
I saw a wonderful photograph of you two other people at King's Cross, against this wall at King's Cross, and it's a stunning photograph. And you're just against this yellow wall, and I never realised that yellow could look so good. And you're here, you are with your yellow earrings. So is there what does yellow represent to you then?
So, sometimes I go out in all yellow. It's fun. And I think it's disarming I wear these yellow earrings now because I think people just need to see the color. I think it's like a really powerful color.
It's bright, isn't it?
It's bright.
It's the bright, I mean, because yellow
It's energizing.
Yeah.
It's energizing. But when we're together, we often wear all yellow, all four of us. We're head to toe yellow. We have many, I love wearing matching costumes with people. But when we're together, we wear all yellow, and we'll go out, and we did a thing where we did this project that was about women and walking in the north of England, and we traveled all over and just talked to people and walked around, and people just come. It's that thing of communicating with people. They just were so, it's so disarming, these four like middle-aged women wearing full yellow, that you can get away with anything.
Yeah.
And
yeah,
anybody will talk to you. And we did this thing once where we were walking in Pendle, and we thought, let's see how many people will let us pick up their dogs. And, you know, who could we, you know, hey, let's see if somebody will let us hold their baby. You know, just things like that. And then you have these
conversations. So you have like a little project.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's just, you know, it's just funny. And
yeah.
And fun. But we see ourselves as kind of, you know, conduits. We want to communicate, and we need to ask people, what is it that, you know, what are we trying to find out? We don't know. We just walk around and talk to people. So the EPs come from that.
Okay. And what's getting you through lockdown? What things are kind of like, you say you're drawing every day.
Well, I am, every day I'm so grateful to live here. I mean, I live here just below the Chevin in Otley, and those trees just make me feel connected to something that works. And just to kind of be out in nature, that's what's getting me through.
The sky is great. Me and my daughter drove back to Leeds yesterday, and the sky was stunning. The big solid clouds that looked like they were made of like ice cream, and you know, a mucky ice cream. But they were really,
what flavor?
Graphite.
Oh, yum. this time of year, I'm always in America with my mom. I'm always there. And I'm just counting my blessings every day. We're all fine. I'm not going into, you know, I just refuse to go into anything. I'm really lucky. No negativity. I'm just, I hope to be with her soon. And I don't know when I'm going to see her, but I'm just gonna, you know, I'm gonna love where I am. And you know, I just feel so lucky, and I'm just gonna tend to these plants and, you know, spread some yellow energy and smile under my mask.
Smile under your mask, yeah. Yeah, I've got a lovely mask. I think it's a lovely mask anyway. So I got this given yesterday. It says, "Today is my new favourite day. Some paths are destined to cross," and it's Winnie the Pooh. And it's too small. I've got all these masks, got a massive face and these little masks.
Oh, wow,
they're pulling my ears and stuff, and they're awkward. But
yeah,
we have to wear a mask.
We have to, and it's, you know what? It's fine, isn't it?
It's all right. It's fine.
Well,
it's
worse
things.
There are worse things.
And with all our guests, Casey, do you have a recommended album of the week?
Oh, gosh. Do you know what? I want to hear... I really want to listen to Dark Side of the Moon, Pink Floyd. I've been really wanting to listen to that recently.
Have you got a copy?
No, I don't.
Oh, well.
I need a record.
This.
So that is what...
Yeah.
Yeah.
One specific track? Or just the album?
I know, that's an album that you have to listen to the whole thing, I think.
Thank you, Casey, for coming on our Ego podcast, and thanks to you listeners for tuning in. Casey Orr is continuing to work on her project Saturday Girl, and details can be found on her website, caseyorr.com, Twitter at Casey Ann Orr, Facebook Casey Orr, Instagram at Casey Orr Photo. You can listen to this again and download this podcast on iTunes, Mick Artistic's Ego Podcast. Further links can be found on our website, mickartistic.com. See you on the road and on the waves next time. Bye.